You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia.
Bon dia.
What's early. That? It's always early for us.
Like you said, every day is a Monday.
I like to think so.
Simple as that.
We got a special guest came in today.
Who'd you bring in?
I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, guys.
Hey,
Carlo,
what's up?
Hey, yes, I'm Carlo Colozza, Director of Health and Safety for Bothwell Accurate. Happy to be here.
How many years you been there?
About over 2 years.
All right, thanks for coming in, Carlo.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have a similar background to Phil? Were you at the ministry as well?
Or no, we both, we were just speaking about this a while ago, or not too long ago, but I met Phil 18 years ago. We worked at the same consulting firm. You know, I was starting out in health and safety. I think it was like 2006 when I started, and you might have already been there maybe a year before started.
I think I joined there, I was 22, something like that, when I joined safety and joined the consulting company.
Yeah.
So we go way back.
Yeah. And I've always not kept in touch, but, you know, followed him and, you know, because, you know, I thought we were a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
The consulting group there, we all got along.
We did have a good team there,
we
man.
We
did
at the time. We were all friends.
Yeah.
And we're all kind of coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, pretty much. And some of us took different paths. Some of us went to the MOL. Carlo went on to being director of safety for a variety of companies.
Yeah.
All right. And then we crossed paths a few times during investigations and stuff like that.
Those were fun times.
We had a couple good stories from some investigations.
At the courtroom or at the...
No, not in the courtroom, on the job site.
But all right.
Yeah.
I think we did one. I did a critical, wasn't it? And a guy had fallen. And then it was one of your guys.
You know, falling off the roof, he decided to tie off to the roof hoist, you know, Friday afternoon, 3:30, you know, it's usually when incidents happen, right?
Statistically, yep.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the guy fell, and then the investigation, but I don't think it went too far.
The roof hoist?
Yes, the roof hoist.
What's the roof hoist? You mean the ladder with
No, it's an actual A-framed hoist with a winch and reel and...
Oh, okay.
And basically, he tied off to kind of like the base, and he didn't have any counterweights on the...
So he went right down.
And he ran right down, yeah.
Did the hoist go down with him? I can't remember.
Yeah, the hoist went down with him,
right? Yeah,
and the guy just sustained a broken leg at the time.
See, this goes back to our conversation about falls and different types of falls. How high was that fall?
Well, at least 10 feet, because we had to call you in, right?
So we all know about the 10 feet, 8 feet, whatever,
8 feet, 10 feet, it's all...
Great.
And it became a critical.
Yeah, right? It became a critical.
And you got a construction background, too? You got started in construction?
Well, more I growing up, working with family members as laborers, and that's the extent of my... my construction background, but I always enjoyed construction. I find it exciting, you know, the different aspects of construction. I love to see how things are built. You know, it's a sense of accomplishment when you see it, you know, go from step one to basically, you know, the finished product. I love it, right? So I don't think I could ever do the industrial back, you know, his safety. I've done it.
It's
not bad.
It's just boring.
Yeah. Construction is construction. I love it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's more activity, more
action.
It's
always a different episode every day.
Every day, every hour.
Every hour. That's true. Every hour.
Every hour. You know, one day.
Change the channel.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
Yeah. And safety is pretty intricate on a construction project, right? A lot of moving parts, a lot of variables, a lot of different types of hazards based on the scope of work that you're doing.
And, absolutely.
You know, going through the starting off in this industry and in safety, and me and Carlo have a very similar, well, kind of the same path at the beginning, and then we diverged a bit.
Yeah.
But, I remember our teams, we used to, and as field consultants, we used to go in the mud, we used to go here, we used to push each other, yeah, let's go. Better than the postman, you know, rain, snow, we're there.
You know, and I, at the time, I liked the freedom, just going from site to site, dealing with different clients, different, you know, when I first started with this consulting firm, they gave me low-rise residential construction, which was, you know, fun.
The kids,
right?
The kids of the Wild Wild West.
It is. Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. I remember an incident happening on a framing site with a framing client, and I went to go investigate. Nobody there. They all scattered. The workers, the zero crew. Witnesses.
The crew. They're really good at that. No,
the crew. Okay, who do I speak to? Well, they're all gone, right? So the crew. So speaking to the foreman of this framing contractor, I go, where are they? Well, I don't know. You know, the ambulance got in and came in and didn't, can't find them. They just scattered. So this problem with immigration and illegal workers has been going, 18 years at least.
It ain't going to go away.
It's not going to go away.
Thousands of years,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's a big challenge. It's always been a big challenge. People that work on the front lines like me and Carlo and have gone through the motions, have done the investigations, you know, it's fair to say that it's a massive challenge and it's been there like I said, thousands of years, right? Yeah. And I think our show, experiences from different health and safety consultants and stuff like that kind of really helps shine a light on the front line in terms of what's happening out there, because it's very easy to be stuck in corporate safety and stuck in boardrooms and stuck in looking at paperwork and not realize what's happening out in the field.
Yeah.
And this, my advice to every safety professional that I come across where I work with or whatever it may be is put on your boots, make sure they're full of mud, go onto site, spend time with the workers, watch what they're doing, ask as many questions, especially if you're not knowledgeable or don't have that much experience in construction. You know, you want to get out there. You want to talk to the workers. You want to see what challenges they're facing. You want to see like where they're at, you know, that crew, that group, whatever it may be.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in that. And I aside from my corporate responsibilities, I do go out. I try to get out.
It's hard.
You have to see what
the struggles are. I wish all the interior designers, architects, and engineers would apply the same mentality.
Right,
I see them go out onto sites wearing dress shoes and stuff like that in a suit or something.
Don't. They drive by and have the conversation. It's almost like it's in a karate movie. They're like,
I think
come over here, talk to me on the sidewalk where there's no dirt.
I think for most of them, they're just afraid to take that step. Who's going to bring me out there? They want to kind of be in my experience, right?
Sure,
but I do know some engineers who actually get out there.
No, I know, but they're far and few. The stereotype's attached to them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard of a tradesperson who's like, yeah, I'm never on site. They're always on site.
Of course not. Yeah.
That's the problem.
No, there's
the four people, that's a different story, right?
Well, being on site in a contractor's trailer doesn't mean you actually know what's going on.
That's a very good point.
There's some various degrees of being on site.
Yeah.
I'm on site. You
spend the whole time in the trailer. Closer on
go
site.
Go past now the fence line.
Yeah. No, you
go
up.
Yeah.
You got to get out there.
Yeah.
You got to get out there and you got to put yourself out there and you.
You'll learn your experience.
You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And people are afraid to make mistakes. I get it. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to do the wrong thing. You don't want to, right? You're not feeling comfortable and stuff. Yeah. But the only way to get ahead in this career or the only way to learn more is to put yourself out there and make the mistakes.
Yeah. But also, I think it's important to get out there and speak to the tradespeople.
100%.
Ask them what their struggles. Put safety aside for a bit. Before you get to safety, that's always been my approach. How's your day going? You know, tell me what you're doing here. I'm really interested in how you're building this. What are some of your challenges? I always start off with,
Respected the building inspectors that would do that.
Yeah.
Because they genuinely cared about what's going on here.
Yeah.
And especially if you saw new ideas being presented
or new
materials being presented. I've had that several times with inspectors. Like, tell me a little bit more about this shit. And I was like, well, can we final the inspector for it? Like, can we do the sign off on this shit first? And then we'll talk about this.
If you take a
shoot the shit. I don't want to shoot the shit.
I don't want to shoot the
sign
shit.
Sign the papers. Let's
shoot
go.
The shit after you approved everything.
If you take a genuine interest in what the other person is doing, you'll get a lot more.
I think that's just called passion, man. You know, really wanting to make a difference in people's lives, really wanting to make a difference on the job site, right? It comes from passion.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, even in this profession, there's NPCs. You know, they just stand there, do the walk. Okay, you're not wearing your heart out, but right? And
easy stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I get it. Fine, it's a paycheck collected, but. You know, I think what differentiates really good safety professionals is passion and you know, wanting to go out there, wanting have drive, have ambition, mm-hmm. you know, want to ask the questions, want to, you know, not be afraid to make mistakes or fail or say something wrong. You know, yeah. It's just learning from your own mistakes.
Yeah. Listen, within my own team, we have a good group, a good team. Do we always agree? No. But we're all in one room. We can say what's on our mind. You know, it can get elevated at times. Sure. But at the end of the day, you know, we all go back and think about what everyone's point is. And, okay, well, maybe I'm not right in this, you know, with my opinion. Let me take their opinion into consideration. And, you know, it's good. Yeah. You got to be open to some type of constructive criticism.
100%. You know, it's funny. I went through this with two safety teams this week. Both of them are my clients. So I work with one team and I work with another team. And it turns out that one client was subbing for another client. And now there were some issues regarding some fall protection and how this work was going to be done to ensure the safety of the workers and of a couple variables there. And, you know, I put all the teams in one meeting, both teams, and I go, listen, and, you know, their experiences vary. And there's some people on this team that are new to safety. And then there's some people on these teams that are, you know, been doing safety for a long time.
Yeah.
And I go, listen, we're going to get this solved no matter what. But let's take this as a learning exercise. Let's see how well as a team we can function, pull up the problem, look at it, analyze it, and come up with a theory or a hypothesis, and then find the supporting regulations to support what we're saying. Because it's easy to say, you should do this and you should do that. Okay, but explain to me how. Mm. Because when you're developing procedures or you're developing or trying to solve a problem, you got to go through the steps. The worker is going to set up the ladder like this. The worker is going to climb up like that. The worker is, right? You got to visually see these steps. And each one of these steps, a hazard may or may not exist. And what regulation applies to that hazard? What regulation applies? It was a great exercise. And I think it was a learning experience for the newer people on the teams. Mm-hmm. And it was a good way for us to show, you know, try to work through a problem.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
When everybody agrees and everything, okay, yeah.
That makes no sense.
No.
I was going to ask both of you guys. Yep. I just get the sense from all the stuff that Phil's brought up on the show, and we've done so many shows now. I still feel that safety in Canada, I won't speak for the U.S., it's still reactive instead of proactive.
Yeah,
it is. And if you guys can let me know, what's the latest and greatest recent thing that has been proactive in the safety industry, in construction? I guess maybe the $500 fine, which has not been
500,000.
It's
more reactive, right?
Yeah, that one's still.
That's still reactive.
Yeah.
But what are, like, I still feel like the safety industry is reactive.
Okay.
I don't know. You want to handle that one?
Yeah. You know, it's not in Canada, but because of my experience in the U.S., I know there's the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. So it's a partnership with OSHA, and you got to maintain a high level of safety. You have to follow a safety management system. And you're audited just like CORE, just like ISO. You got to maintain all that. And you got to, you know, show OSHA that you're a true partner with them. So it allows the internal responsibility system to actually take place, when you get a phone call, if you're a general contractor, you get a phone call about, you know, a ministry or an OSHA inspector calls the general contractor and says, "Yeah, I got a complaint about your washrooms." Now, here, the Ministry of Labor would have to take part of his day, go investigate, for example, take time out of his busy day to go investigate. OSHA would basically call the contractor and said, "Can you please follow up with this and send me a report?" So you're not taking a Ministry of Labor inspector out of the field where he's focused on something probably more serious, you know, and it just, that's proactive. I like that personally because you have a true partnership and you allow the internal responsibility system to take place within the company.
My only issue with something like that is that trust level. I pick up the phone and say, "Hey, you have a complaint. There's a washroom facility. Can you handle it?"
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously hasn't been handled the first time.
Yeah.
And I got to call you. How do I trust you to solve this problem that you created?
Well, that would be on the inspector's relationship with the contractor, you know, the person involved. you know, who he's having, you know, you have to gain that trust level for sure. It's all in the discretion of the inspector.
And keep this also in mind. OSHA inspectors can drop fines. I think what their fine is per charge, $16,000 right there on the spot. Yes. They come to your site, multiple contraventions. That's five contraventions. That's $16,000 times five. Here's your bill.
Yeah.
Not even court. What is nothing. It
like prices right, OSHA? Like, what's going on here?
Well, hey, listen.
They just have different powers.
Yeah.
There's not very many of them, and depending on what state, but
I got a solution for the whole, because it's funny that the bathroom keeps on coming up, right? Yeah. And that's why I was laughing when Monty was the so-called poster child there at the time, right? Mm-hmm. He kept on talking.
Monty McNutt.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Remember how he was always on media talking about washrooms?
Oh, that was during COVID and washrooms.
Yeah, I know, but it was just like, there's bigger problems than washrooms. And I got a solution for washroom issues on anybody's job site. Whoever the foreman or forewoman is, the moment that the washrooms are not taken care of, you start garnishing their wages right away.
A site supervisor?
Yeah.
Take it out of their pocket?
Yeah. Yeah. I guarantee you, that fucking toilet will be taken care of right away.
Yeah. One thing's for sure.
You don't even need to go on there. You don't need to give them a ticket. You don't need to do anything. You just automatically start garnishing their wages.
There is definitely a bunch of ideas, especially some out of box of ideas on how to improve health and safety in this province. But I think the common ingredient for all of these ideas comes down to more enforcement. It comes down to more inspectors. It comes down to more eyes double checking and triple checking. You know, you need someone to pick up the phone. You need someone to take, you're still taking time to make the phone call and this and that, right? And I think the last stat was it'd take 120 years for the Ministry of Labor inspectors to inspect every single workplace in the province.
Yeah, that's what you guys are saying.
Some crazy thing like that. But, you know,
I don't know if more is better.
I agree with that. I think you have to find the right inspector. I mean, one that is willing to...
Well-trained inspectors.
Can we have more?
I did come across an inspector, was it last year, a year and a half ago, in Georgetown. We had a guy go down, heat stress, non-occupational, but called the ministry, you know, because he became unconscious. She was fantastic to work with, you know, and very cooperative and whatever you want. That's probably the best...
Best encounter?
Encounter with an inspector that I've come across. Yeah. Again, she was also from Northern Ontario. A little different.
Different culture, different background.
Yeah,
okay, I get it.
Fantastic.
Listen, there's a variety of different enforcement officers and styles and personalities. And, you know, you definitely have to be committed. You definitely have to have experience. You definitely have to know how to maneuver in certain situations. And a lot of that comes from experience, right?
Exactly.
And an inspector goes on site and you're speaking, everyone's listening. Right. And you know, there's a bit of pressure there on the side of an inspector to make sure that what they're doing is accurate and the information they're communicating and the information they're gathering and stuff like that. So it's not easy being an inspector.
No.
You know, sometimes you're the bad guy. Sometimes you're the good guy. You know, I've been called an asshole. I've been called fair.
That's a Monday for me.
Hey, listen, I've as an inspector, I've had guys look at me and say, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think that would, you know, maybe it's just me. I wouldn't even think that would be an issue, but
what?
I've never been an inspector, so.
No, you get
it. Can you give me a time when that's going to happen, just so I can plan it?
What?
Kill me.
Oh, yeah, no. Listen, one time I remember, right, the beginning of being an inspector, me and another inspector were on a job site, and we were speaking English, obviously, and the workers and stuff. I swear to God, this was in our first year. And it was a forming company, and you can hear all the Portuguese guys, fucking for this caralho, shinch me, and we didn't say anything. We stayed quiet, speaking in English, this and that, let them go. And then I really got a little frustrated, but I go, these guys, if they shut us down, if we grab these guys and bury, in Portuguese, if we grab these guys and put them in the forums, bury them in here, nobody would know. Man, as soon as I heard the guy say that, I go, oh yeah, hold on a sec. Bing, bing, Portuguese, not stop. Pow, pow, pow. These guys' mouths dropped.
Love it.
They're like, oh, this guy's Portuguese. We're fucked. And this and that. It's, you know, I don't know, man.
The question of more is I could easily just say, listen, can we add more liberals to the parliament? And will that make things better? No.
All right. So that's what I'm talking about. No.
You lost me at liberals.
There's a line drawn, I think, that there's a lot of big companies, big corporations that have a lot of big friends that get passes. And when there's blitz that go on, they go and attack the small fish. No different than what our current CRA is doing. They're going after small fish, and that's what I don't like. So if you are going to do a blitz, everybody gets treated the exact same way. Doesn't matter if you're the PCLs or the Elistons, the big players, and everybody. That's what I'm looking at. So you can't have preferential. You can't have that, right?
But I think, I don't know if that goes on. I'm not going to say, I don't know. I have no evidence of that, but... I do think there needs to be a priority on the site visits. The Elistons, the Bothwells, whoever, the bigger firms. Yeah, we have our systems in place. Okay, if you have a health and safety department, our mandate is to promote that, push it through the company.
Sure.
Right? But I think we need to either enforce more enforcement on the medium to smaller companies, but also help them. Don't just enforce. Don't just lay down the hammer.
Yeah, but it's funny. Like lately, I've been getting a lot of high-rise construction workers, tradespeople.
Yeah,
telling me, Manny, I want to come on the show because I got a lot to say.
You know what? They have a lot of people have a lot to say, but they're
but all the lot jobs, to say guys are all high-rise.
Yeah,
and I know the Western, the Wild Wild West that's going on in high-rise, but unfortunately, the politics turn a blind eye to it. Because those are money-driven projects.
Yes.
Right? They're infrastructure projects.
There is some level of balance that needs to be maintained.
Yeah.
Right? It can't go too far to one side. It can't go too far to another side. It has to... Enforcement has to stay neutral in terms of, who you're enforcing, what you're enforcing, when you're enforcing. And Ministry of Labor has a few different branches on that tree, and one of that branch is the Chief Prevention Office, and they do a lot of great work when it comes to assisting and preventing, and they're doing stuff that previously was never done. And the Chief Prevention Office was created part of that Metron case, the quadruple fatality. After that case happened, yes, that case happened, and part of the recommendations was we should have our own chief prevention office that deals with prevention. So the Ministry of Labor is like a coin. It has one side that deals with prevention and one side that deals with enforcement.
Very similar to WorkSafe BC.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? So it does. I think the when you start getting to like the edge of the coin, where that line is and where that blur is, where it's prevention or is it enforcement? What are we talking about here? What's going on here? And, people start leaning, especially companies, businesses, let's just say, hey guys, less enforcement is good. Well, let's talk more about prevention, right? So there's a lot of parties that would like to see less enforcement. And then there's a lot of parties, such as workers.
When I hear less enforcement, I hear less eyeballs on my job site. That's not what doing it is. Things correctly.
So put it, one comparison I like doing is like the ride checks. Okay? Drinking and driving. We know what happens. Yeah. We all know someone that's drinking and driving.
I'm too old, man. I have not been out to the point where I've been pulled over by ride.
Which is good.
I'm assuming it happens past 10:30 at night.
Yeah,
for sure. You're in bed before the officers even set up the check.
I have not been pulled over by ride.
What happens if, and we know that there's a percentage of drivers, especially during certain times of the year, that drinking and driving goes up. Now, what happens if we just talk about prevention of drinking and driving? Don't drink and drive. Here's a media blitz, MADD, this and that, blitz, posters, right? Okay, a blitz on prevention. That's great. We spend $50 million on media and marketing and advertising. Mm-hmm. Great. But if you don't have the enforcement component, if you don't have the officers out there setting up the checks, checking people, catching people, charging people, putting people in jail, how much does the prevention really work?
I would do surprise checks.
Surprise. Yeah.
But the problem is that how many job sites are currently going on right now just in the city of Toronto? It's got to be thousands, right?
It goes by how many.
But how many Ministry of Labor inspectors are there
in the city of Toronto? I'll say active today, right now. I'd say the over and under is five, and I'd say less than five.
And they're busy. They
five, not 500. Five.
construction inspectors.
So how do you surprise a thousand jobs?
You can't. They're it's impossible. They don't have the manpower to actually cover all the construction.
And the OPP doesn't have the manpower to set up ride checks at every single point either, right?
Yeah.
But there's a difference between 20 ride checks on a Friday night and two ride checks.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, enforcement is tricky. When the conservatives came in, the liberals had actually planned to hire, I think it was 150 new inspectors.
Right.
In the first week the conservatives came in, the first thing we did, they chopped those 150 new hires. First thing. Bow.
Wow.
Right? So, anyways, I hear there's an election coming up, provincial one.
I don't know anything about it. I don't listen to mainstream media, so I don't know anything about it.
We'll wait
and see what happens.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, I think it's just being called because his analytics team probably figured we got to do it now for you to win. You got to do it now to serve the people.
I think the Trump effect, the ripples, they're all happening all around us, man.
Exactly.
All right, let's jump into today's safety. Otherwise,
we can go on and on.
What are we going to jump into?
Right? Like, let's.
Are we jumping into now?
So we were talking about the Ministry of Labor and the prevention branch and the Chief Prevention Office. Part of their initiative, and when did this start taking place? What, 2014, something like that?
Yes.
Give or take?
Yeah, give or take.
When they started doing this whole SOCI / accredited programs? Or yeah, SOCI was more recent?
SOCI is more recent, but that's more recent, say, within the last 5 years.
What's SOCI?
We're going to go through it. Yeah. But okay. It's... I'll explain it. I'll just go through it.
What does it stand for?
Supporting Ontario Safe Employer Program.
Safe Employer Program.
So yeah. This is kind of like that partnership that Carlo was talking about in terms of employers partnering with the government and getting a green check mark saying that, hey, you guys are good. And if there's any issues, some stuff like that, right? So it's something similar. We've talked about this on the show before where you become accredited as an employer, where your health and safety program becomes accredited. They give it a stamp of approval.
It's recognized.
You get a certificate. And then with that certificate, now you can apply for WSIB rebates.
And how long is that certificate good for?
3 years, I think.
It's a three-year program. So right now I'm going into my second year. The first year was just passing our core audit. So from the core audit, you have corrective actions, and you have to complete the corrective actions 100%, and it has to be audited by a third-party auditor, and he has to validate the corrective actions. We submit it with the application, and it basically, my first go-around, I submitted it November 2023. I didn't get the final results until July 2024. Yes. It's a small department that looks after this program because they're also approving the Working in Heights programs. And so you got to be patient.
I mean, what are some of the corrective actions?
So have it laid out.
Yep.
Getting ahead of the PDF.
It's okay. I took some time to create this presentation, guys. Don't, you know?
Sorry. I'm just wondering if the government actually sits in think tank rooms and they try to figure out the acronyms and what's the best acronym to use. Like,
I'm sure there's someone that gets paid $350,000 to come up with these acronyms.
Yeah.
It should be, technically, it should be called SOCIP. SOCIP? Supporting Ontario Safe Employers Program?
Yeah.
They got rid of the program.
Ah. I didn't catch that one.
Yeah.
All right. So the Ministry of Labor recognizes a variety of accredited programs. So there's a health and safety program. We've talked about programs before. Yep. And before all of accredited programs or non-accredited programs is what a lot of employers use, right? So you're a company that has 15 workers, let's say. You're not part of this SOCI program. You're not part of any of these things. The Occupational Health and Safety Act does discuss and lay out exactly that you have to have a health and safety program. You have to implement your program, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of companies aren't part of this accredited program. And out of the construction companies in Ontario, how many do you think are part of these accredited programs versus non-accredited, percentage-wise, Carlo?
I say 10%.
are part of the accredited programs, and the other 90% don't even either don't know about this or
this program, the SOCI program. When I applied, there were about 50 firms in on province of Ontario who had the accreditation. I think we were 51, 52. I can't remember, but we were a small group.
What's the cost?
We're going to jump into that too. Yeah. So we have Supporting Ontario Safe Employer Program, SOCI. It has accredited programs. These are just three out of the six, I think, accredited programs. I learned that there was other ones, responsive care or something like that. I don't know if it's for construction. Sure. It might be for healthcare. It might be for something else. I feel like this program is not just for construction, but I might be wrong. The SOCI program, is it for other
sectors? It could be non-construction companies. It could be most of the people on the, or most of the firms on the list were industrial.
Really?
We were the second construction company actually get the accreditation.
Okay.
So the two biggest ones that are used from my understanding and from putting companies through this process, you're looking at CORE, which is implemented by the IHSA. You're looking at ISO, and then you're looking at the CSA accredited program standard Z45001-19.
I would even say the WSAB HSEP program, excellence program.
Is that also an accredited program?
Yeah.
Under SOCI?
It is.
See it on the list.
Because what that program does is basically it builds the companies or a smaller firm's health and safety management system, year by year. It allows them to kind of build their program, cater it to more their firm, and then you get a financial rebate. You basically work on five elements per year until you have, fulfilled the full list of what's in a health and safety program.
Yeah. So jumping the gun a bit, but yes, the incentive to be part of these programs in the end is number one, safety.
Yeah.
Number two, money. And number three, the ability to bid on municipal, provincial, federal, maybe federal too.
Yeah, probably federal, yeah.
Possibly, I'm not sure.
Here's my dumb question. If you're associated with this program and you're certified, does that mean that you're a better safety business than the person who's not associated with them?
I mean, you're always going to have your bad apples with any type of company.
I compare it to driver's licenses.
So what you have to do is set the standard within the company. And, if you come across the bad apples, if you come across the, people who are maybe not, haven't fully bought into the health and safety program, the system's there to kind of help you manage the program. Does it make you a safer company? I would say yes. But you can't take your foot off the gas and just think you're good. I'm SOCI accredited and I'm CORE certified. I'm good because you got to manage people at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. It's challenging. It raises the bar within the organization for health and safety. It puts a lot of onus on the organization, on your internal responsibility system, how it's going to be managed, which is good because a lot of employers need direction in terms of how to develop a health and safety program.
They do.
But again, can you cheat the system? Yes, 100%. You can cheat it.
Or do you abuse the system
I think it's more cheating the system in terms of, can you get the accreditation without doing all the homework? I think yes.
I know, but my question is more about the value associated with the accreditation, right?
Meaning what, the money-wise?
Meaning what, it's an age-old argument you can say, is a union carpenter better than a non-union carpenter? And I always say
it depends on the management team.
Exactly.
Right?
Because it depends on the organization. I do know
small firms, and you could probably back me up on this, is that you probably have smaller firms that want to do the right thing. They need that coaching and they just don't know how to go about it.
Yeah.
So their intentions is to, work responsibly, work safe, protect their workers. It's just, it all comes from the top.
Yeah. And one thing I did learn with some of this, a little bit more research, and I've dealt with this program and I've dealt with CORE and ISO, that you can apply to have your own program accredited.
Yeah.
So really? I don't have to follow CORE. I don't have to follow ISO. I don't have to follow CSA. You can just make your own program and apply to for it to be accredited as long as it meets the criteria for the accreditation, right? So you can just bypass all of these individuals or these organizations and just do your own, which is a good option too.
Yeah.
Right? For some organizations.
Yeah. For the bigger firms, like you said before, it's just, you know, certain jobs require, or, you know, in the tendering process, they require a CORE or a CORE equivalent, you know, to just to get on the bid sheet.
Yeah. So see, that's me outside. I'm not a safety guy. Yeah. I'm not.
Which makes you perfect.
For, I know. So, yeah, so that's why I think the only purpose behind this is so then you could be given the opportunity to bid on projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So think about.
It's got nothing to do with safety, in my opinion.
Listen, it does because.
Well, the second thing you brought up was money. Safety first, then money.
Sometimes I probably don't even put safety as first. I'd put the money as first in some cases. But that being said, as an, and I'm going to put my enforcement hat here on for a second. Whether you're an accredited program or a non-accredited program, if you have a fatality, critical, whatever it may be, an investigation, what the inspector is going to be looking for is whether or not you follow your health and safety policy and program, mm-hmm. whether or not it's being implemented on the job site, whether or not you are contravening any laws, right? I don't care what color your program is. I don't care what's affiliated yeah. with. I don't care about any of those things. As an enforcement officer, you're neutral. You're not leaning to one. This one's better. That one's better. No. Are you doing what you say you're going to be doing? And are you following the law?
Yep.
Period. Whether you're those guys or this guy or that guy, it makes no difference. And just back to the enforcement, whether it's a big company or small company, no, the ref is here.
But would there be prevent, again, fuck, I can't even say that word today.
It's early today.
would there be a special treatment from the inspector if you're accredited with this and you're not accredited?
I would like to say hopefully not.
Yeah, no, human because nature. The injury or the critical happened, the fatality happened, they're there to investigate. So
if the non-accredited company still has a health and safety program, yep. they still have a health and safety consultant, but they're not accredited, they should be treated exactly the same
Absolutely.
Way as a company that is accredited.
Absolutely.
Because the fall is fall. We took care of all of our safety. We went through everything. There was an accident. We know that construction is dangerous.
Yeah.
There should not. It's basically orange and orange.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
has to be treated that way.
So yeah. that's how it should be treated. Yeah.
So one of the things when a fatality or critical does happen, right? You mean the inspector's there to investigate and he's there to see where the fault is. So you're automatically, theoretically guilty until proven innocent, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know of a couple of situations where I investigated, inspector went through everything, you know, went through training records, went through supervisory, toolbox talks. And fortunately, or unfortunately, or however you want to look at it, was unfortunately for the worker because he was critically injured. But fortunately for the supervisor and the company, we did everything according to our program. And the inspector basically said, even the GC at the time basically said, You guys hit it every, you know, hit the mark on everything. You know what I mean? That's due diligence at its finest.
Yep.
And the worker ended up getting charged for not following.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So ultimately it was found, that worker was found.
$5,000 fine because he was the cause of a critical injury.
Like I said previously, man, you know, inspectors sometimes give out a yellow card. Inspector sometimes gives out a red card. And sometimes play goes on.
Yeah.
Right, and you got to make that determination, and you got to be fair, and you got to listen to all the points, and you got to listen to all the perspectives, and you got to take a lot of things into consideration before you make a judgment call, such as serious as not going to lay charges, right? But listen, it's those are different times too.
Yeah,
those are different times, Carlo. Okay, you know, so
now where we're going.
So we got different programs, and you know, kind of to sum this up, and not to minimize it, but you know, it's. You're a company, you get a health and safety program, you got to jump through some hoops with these guys first. Once you jump through the hoops with those guys, then you got to go jump some more hoops with those guys. And when you jump through those hoops, then you want to collect some money, you got to go jump through some more hoops. What's that process look like for any of these accredited programs? First, you got to either build or pay someone to build your health and safety policy and program.
Oh, Yeah.
Well, you gotta pay for it.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you it's know, not free.
It's funny.
Unless you're asking ChatGPT and create your own.
You can. It's just garbage.
Yeah. I know. When you said that, I just remember seeing a core audit. A friend of mine showed me a core audit. He worked for a company and he got like 39%, and he had a consultant. I'm like, how does anybody get 39%? It was like on a core audit.
Don't get me started.
And they didn't have a stitch of documentation for anything.
Don't get me started,
Carl. So how did they get 39?
Nobody knows. It's just, you got to be, one thing, if you hire a consultant or hire somebody to do, you know, to build your program, you better do your background check.
Well, yeah, I know you want to get the best safety professional, right? I can tell you with my programs and the clients that I've put through both of those or assisted,
right?
With both the core which? Program.
Core and ISO?
Sorry?
Which, both of which? Core and ISO?
Yeah, core and ISO. I've never done a CSA standard. And let me first to say that there are more similarities between these styles than there are differences.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
And well, it means that there's common ground regarding safety.
Yes. Well, that's what it means. There's some structure, format, and information that needs to be identified, discussed, and communicated.
Core is based off the ISO standard.
Yeah.
And it just gets into...
So it's ISO more, came first and then core came second?
Yeah. Well, core's been around... Let's say 30 years, started off in Alberta.
ISO came first, though.
Because it's
international. So that's ISO is International Standards Organization.
U.S. recognizes it?
The entire world.
Oh, the whole world.
Yeah. Right? So, and we're talking China? About...
Well, let's not go there.
Excluding some countries, but maybe they do. I don't know. But
India?
Stop. Whoops. Stop, man. Okay, not everybody's a first world country, or not everybody
Dubai?
Regards safety. Oh, no, those guys definitely don't have ISO. But that being said, there's different standards, and you'll see them on like quality control, environmental, right? So you'll see on the side of building ISO 9001.
Yeah, you've seen that, right?
So ISO 9001 is what? Quality control?
Quality control.
Yeah. So these are a specific set of standards that are recognized international. And with that ISO, for example, You're ISO certified, you're recognized internationally, right? Which is a little different than CORE, which is more focused to provincial and Canada.
Canada, yes.
It's CORE is only in Canada, is that correct to say?
CORE is only in Canada, yes.
Right, so why would they need to...
What does CORE stand for?
Certificate of Recognition.
And what does ISO stand for?
International Standards Organization. Okay. Right, so... Anyways, that being said, to get any of these accredited programs, there's a lot of hoops that you need to jump through as an organization, and there is an associated cost.
Absolutely.
A big one to get these accredited programs.
4 or 5 figures.
Depending on the size of the company.
Yeah.
Oh, it's based on how
But many. I think the rebate money that you get back from some of these programs, you just Bothwell Accurate reinvests it into the program.
Which is good.
Because everything costs, right? There's a cost for everything, right? Yeah, we want to be safe. We want to do the right thing, but it's a cost.
And again.
It's an investment in our people.
You also get to bid on these projects that... require core or accredited programs. But man, you know what I compare
that
to?
Muddy waters, man.
It's like, hey, you got the VIP card for the club, so you get to do line bypass and then go into the club and you get automatic access to the VIP booth.
Fast pass, right? Hey,
and it comes with a free bottle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make you a better employer than the person who doesn't have it. That's my argument.
Well, I think it does because if, you know, because someone who's hired to enforce or to kind of develop the program, communicate the program, train the program, we're always on call, we're always working to uplift the standard within our organization and that to us, my department, that's our priority, our number one priority every day. So it does make them better. Now we still gotta monitor people. We still can't say, okay, you're good.
You still need that enforcement component.
You still need that enforcement, yes. So, again, it's a level of safety that we have to kind of promote, train.
So it's good for 3 years, and then after 3 years, you got to go through the whole loop again?
Yeah.
Is that how it works? I'm not sure.
Well, for CORE, yes.
Oh, really?
No, I'm talking about the SOCI.
It's just a 3-year program. After You know, year four, there's nothing else because I've asked the question.
So there's no more money
No.
So you only get money rebates for the first 3 years, and then after what, you just, I'm associate.
Well, you can still say I'm associate member.
You can still say you're associate member, but that's not going to stop Bothwell from always being better because
of course,
senior management team demand improvement.
Once you raise the bar. If you're a reputable
company, once you raise the bar, you got to be better all the time.
For sure.
Because I know our president doesn't accept anything below the highest level. He said it in management meetings, and when it comes to safety, he doesn't want, he cares about, he's want, like, from, I've been in this industry a while, and George Fasalo is our president, and he means what he says, right? So he cares about his people, and I don't want to get into some of the good things that he does, but he does a lot of good things for his people.
Which is nice.
Even the senior management team, they do a lot of good things for their people. They care because they understand that that's their investment. Without the guys in the field, they're nothing.
Yeah.
Right? So,
listen,
it's one of the ways.
Safety, it's safe. The more an employer cares about workers,
mm-hmm.
obviously the better they treat the workers.
Yeah.
Right? And some of these businesses have been around a really long time, and they're really good at treating their workers well.
Yeah.
Right? Some businesses, and you've come across companies.
Absolutely.
Where they have company A, B, C, D, E, F, and G are all assholes, right? But no, you know, there are employers out there that just do not give a shit about the workers.
Yeah. Period. Bottom line, it's money.
Right? They'll hire a consultant just for, you know, just come to say over here, I have a safety guy.
Don't start knocking consultants. You know me very well.
No, I'm just telling you, based on my experience back when we both worked,
fair.
There were firms that I was representing, they just wanted me there and they wanted that report. There are some really good consultants that care about their employees care about their firms. There's an invested interest. Sure. They have skin in the game.
Hey, listen, just the amount of possible fines is enough motivation for most.
Yes.
Right? But hey, so jumping back into SOCI, it's an accreditation program, recognition of employers who've successfully implemented and accredited occupational health and safety management systems and meet other criteria set out by the CPO. Yeah. Basically, like we said, you jump through the hoops without going into super detail because we only got an hour, but you go through the process, you apply WSIB, you got to jump through some more hoops, and if everything goes well, hey, you're getting back 15% of your... 15% of
it's,
your...
It's 10 first year, 7 second year, 5 third year.
You're getting...
No, I thought it was 15, 10, 5.
No, it's... I think it's 10, 7, and 5.
Wait a minute. The money that you've given them, you're getting...
So it's based off your WSIB premiums.
That's what it is. Okay. WSIB premiums. No, but I think it's... I was.
We can double check that, but that's the way that was communicated to me.
Okay. It's I had it here.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I couldn't figure out. If you have a fatality or you're charged, can you get kicked off of the SOCI program?
Yes, you can't have a fatality or critical.
Or critical.
That's a requirement for SOCI.
SOCI or WSIB? Because I saw that on the WSIB website saying you will not get money if you have a fatality during SOCI this time.
As well. It's in their criteria. You can't have any of those. Critical. I mean, it's more the fatality.
I think it's the fatality.
Critical, you know, it's hard to stop.
Sure. You're walking upstairs and you break your arm.
But if the fatality is the fault of the worker.
No, wait. Not necessarily.
I'm just saying if the fatality is the fault of the worker, why is the business now being penalized?
Shit rolls uphill.
Yeah.
I know, but the worker is the one that caused their own fatality.
It's just the way it is. It's just...
case by case scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Can there be a fatality and a supervisor not charged, for example?
Yes.
Can there be a fatality where the constructor is not charged?
Yes.
Right? It all depends on the scenario. It all depends on, you know, the contraventions. It all depends on whether or not the employer or that foreman, you know, there's a lot of variables there. But when there's a fatality, the chances of the employer getting charged, I'll say over and under, is over 80%.
Okay.
I'll even say 90%.
Yeah.
Right? Very rare that it's the worker complete fault. It's only on them.
Listen, it could be that the worker died as a direct cause of his actions or her actions. Yes, I set up my ladder on this balcony on the 17th floor. I went up the ladder to change this or install this light bulb. I overreached. I fell off the side of the building. The worker set himself up there. The worker set up the ladder. Yes, yes, yes. But Mr. Supervisor, did you know that the worker had to go out there? Did you know that part of the scope of work was setting this up? Did you know that there was a guardrail there? Did you know that he was going to be above the ladder, right? Did the worker tie off?
So part of that, well, so in my scenario, with the drill incident, right? So fortunately, we weren't charged. That worker sustained a critical injury. Say he hypothetically had passed away. We had done everything to kind of mitigate the risk, you know, and if there were charges laid, at the end of the day, a company that would probably just lawyer up and fight it in court. But they would have to be...
Or deal it out, which is a majority of workers.
Or deal it out, right? In my experience, there's justified charges for sure. But there's also, I've also seen charges put against the company that where did these come from? Again, we're all human. Everyone makes mistakes. I've seen an inspector not do a full investigation. He investigates, only speaks to the worker, doesn't speak to the supervisors, doesn't speak to any witnesses, but all of a sudden the charge. Yeah. And that got brought out in court because the judge of the peace, he kind of scolded the inspector. Why is this case?
Sounds
here?
Like a half-assed investigation.
Yeah. Right.
Got time it. Constraints too. I, you know what's interesting, Carlo? Yeah. I think in these last 5 years, especially at the beginning of 2020, that whole sphere, I'll say at least, again, people might disagree with me, but I'll say at least, and just speaking on the construction side, I'll say at least 75% of criticals are not getting charged. Okay. Just because of the amount of paperwork, just because of our current justice system,
and
just
the five
because
inspectors on staff.
And the five inspectors on staff, and
wow,
they're not getting charged. I've had a case where a worker got critically injured and no fault is, he's just minding his own business and a whole bunch of stuff collapsed on top of him. And that inspector showed up the first day for the investigation, showed up for the second day in the investigation, and then gone, disappeared. I find out a week later that inspector quit.
So where's the replacement?
None. So all the cases that inspector was on,
that's news to
gone.
Me. I didn't really realize it was that bad.
It's bad.
Yeah. It's bad. They've spoken quite a bit about it's just understaffed, right?
Yeah.
It's not the most glamorous job, and it's got to be
honestly,
mentally.
I wouldn't want that job. No. There's a lot of stress.
I love that job. That was the best job I ever had, man.
Personally, I don't need the stress. I don't need
the name calling and the threats.
Man, but I got a lot of, you know, positives.
Yeah.
I got more positives than negatives.
What's a positive?
You need to be
thank you very much for coming to our job site. This thing was such a massive issue. We complained so much about it, but you identified it.
Then you go down the street and all you hear is, you're an asshole.
I smile.
Yeah.
I say, thank you, Manny.
Yeah.
All right. So.
What's this? Becoming certified.
So this, first of all, how big is your company in terms of workers and size and locations?
So we're in Toronto and in Vancouver. So we're in Langley, BC, and we're also, you know, in Mississauga, Ontario.
Okay.
So roughly we're about 800 people company-wide.
Ooh, wow.
We have a field staff here in Toronto, about 300. Dun, dun,
dun. This is the A-team.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yes, we are the A-team.
Yeah, you guys are the A-team. Yeah, that's why. Okay, sorry.
So you guys are pretty big as a...
Yes.
That's a big employer. Wow. All right. And when did you guys get certified first for CORE?
I believe it was back in 2016.
And how did that process go?
Well, you know, like everything new, we're learning the system. So we struggled just trying to understand it.
Okay.
All right. So
were there any little nuances that they were asking that you guys questioned?
Well, we did a lot of questioning. One of my health and safety managers at the time, still there, Tom, he questioned a lot just because it was a lot of, again, I just say was still learning the CORE process at the time. Obviously, they've gotten a lot better. So there was a lot of back and forth going through that process. And as you go through the process, you make your mistakes, you know, you'll learn. And it's a lot of back and forth between us and the IHSA. Yeah, we maybe didn't pass the first time, but we had we were able to pass the second time. And then, you know, but that's after, you know, making some mistakes. And
Sure. Yeah, listen, definitely a learning process, especially when you're going up.
Yeah.
Right. I remember when this whole accredited programs and CORE came out and stuff like that, certain enforcement officers, including myself, were very skeptical on the situation.
Why?
Because it kind of was like, okay, you got to jump through these hoops. And if you can jump through these hoops, congratulations, you're the only one that gets to bid on this project. Right. So there is, when it first came out, think about it, no one's CORE. The first 10 people, first 10 companies that became CORE, we're the only 10 people that can bid on projects.
Yeah. Mm.
Right? So, you know, I think it's opened up a lot more now in terms of the language in the procurement packages and how other accredited programs such as ISO, right, or the SOCI recognizes all these accredited programs. Why don't the municipalities in their procurement package recognize all these programs, which would make sense, right? Because not every round peg fits in a square hole.
But what I do think is that you have a smaller firm who wants to get onto these bid lists.
Sure.
And I think a good start is joining the, you know, WSIB HSEP program.
Yeah, for small companies.
For small companies. Alberta has a program called C-CORE for smaller businesses. It's a smaller version of CORE and allows them to kind of build their program without having the big health and safety department and then there's a financial rebate through WCB in Alberta.
I've done the math for a couple of my clients for that program, and the cost that they spend versus the money that they receive, it didn't add up. It didn't make sense for
them. I know, but you shouldn't be going into this thing thinking, what's our rebate going to be? You should be going, okay, are we going to be the most safety-aware company? And we're going to prove it in the pudding because we're going to have no injuries, no fatalities. Well,
just because you have a program, just that it should be safety, should be your priority. And whatever style of program or that you have, it needs to be implemented, needs to be communicated. Workers need to be trained. There's a variety of, no matter what program, these are the things that you should be doing when you have a health and safety program or when you're running a business.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, some of the math didn't add up. It didn't make sense. And you know what I mean? So
every company's different, right?
Yeah, so different companies, man. They know.
So you guys have been with them for how long now?
With Bothwell, with CORE?
Yeah.
Since 2016.
Okay, a while now.
So you guys were in the top 15, I guess, 20 that went in, right?
You're right.
Wow.
All right, so you guys have been with CORE. How many pages is your health and safety policy and program?
Well, I've had to break the manual up into two sections.
It's getting big, so now it's
three-inch binder sections or
You've seen some of the programs. Altogether, it's about 400 or 500 pages. Okay. So I've kind of separated it into our policy and procedures, like corporate policy and procedures, and then another manual, work safe practices.
Okay.
Right, and then our site-specific procedures are our site job safety analysis, where we break down the tasks, you know, prioritize, you know, the risk, you know, put the controls in place, and then what's the risk rating after the controls? Or it's a big document that those are essentially our procedures, or site-specific procedures, because you can't just put a general procedure and you know,
you can't chat GPT the whole thing.
You can't chat GPT the whole thing. You
have procedures that are designed for on-site versus warehouse or industrial versus office. Are there different procedures?
Everything should be specific to
the location.
The location.
Or the task.
Yeah,
like setting up a scaffold at this project versus setting up the same scaffold at the same type of house on that project, the procedure is not going to vary.
It's going to be exactly the same. It's going to be totally
different. But you guys have written procedures
for you guys. Yeah. I mean,
we've
taken existing procedures that we've had in place and modified, tweaked it to kind of make it specific to the next project.
Yeah.
At some point, they all follow the same.
Yeah, there's a lot of
similarities, right?
And when it comes to procedures, is this because you need to put these procedures in place to identify step-by-step processes, or like, is just a best practice good enough? Like what makes a procedure a procedure?
A procedure is a step-by-step sequence of events that need to be followed in order to be safe, to be productive, and have quality.
And a procedure is created because you guys did a JHA and figured out all the hazards, and this one's really serious.
We have to assess the risk. We can't just send the crew in and say, here, do it. And then, you know, it's just like sending a crew in without tools. Okay, do it, right? A JHA or JSA is essentially their, one of their tools they need to follow. You can't send a crew in without drawings, right? To, you know, to, you know, replace a roof. Yeah, just do it, right? This is the procedure.
You definitely need some information, right? And depending...
And it needs to be communicated.
Yes, that's vital.
That's vital.
So, and talking about communication and the size of a health and safety policy and program and just kind of challenges that you guys face with implementing any type of health and safety program, not just an accredited program.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges did you guys face implementing this with 800 workers?
Well, obviously language barrier being one of them.
Yeah.
Right. So there's certain, like for example, in Toronto, we have a big Portuguese community within our roofing department. Fortunately for us, we're able to kind of, you know, translate. There's people in our company who could translate. So, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely helps languages, right?
But now it's getting more complicated, right? Portuguese is, that's easy now, right? It's easy. It's the Ukrainian. Okay, well, we have someone who's Polish who can kind of,
So, well, if you guys are interested in a system that you can set up orientations on site that can communicate all that information in multiple languages, feel free to give me a call.
We'll talk.
Hang on, I'm just looking for this plug.
Yeah. I'm the plug, man.
But, you know, we've gotten around it. You know, Spanish, I have somebody who's fluent in Spanish in our department. You know, having a second language as a health and safety professional in this industry, in health and safety, is gold.
Yeah,
I don't care if you're a CRSP.
Yeah.
It's gold. It's the way you communicate. Because I have to get through to you as someone who doesn't speak English or fluently. I need to get through to you. And having that person,
hand
gestures.
It.
You're Italian. Exactly, right? You have to get through to them, right?
But now you're dealing with a bunch of new languages coming into this workforce. Because unfortunately, all the white kids are not getting into construction.
No, they're not. So I had to translate.
Their white parents won't let them get into this.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Okay, well.
Hey, Carlos, sometimes we go a little off.
Am I wrong?
And that's why I'm just not saying anything.
I don't see things based on color or ethnicity race. I see things based on your skill and merit based in this industry.
Yes.
There is utopia and then there's reality. Yeah. So I see there's the difference.
You have to meet somewhere in the middle.
I've seen a huge lineup. I was like I was at a university symposium, you know, come and check out where you should go, your future. The shortest line there was for trades.
Yeah.
And all the white kids were not in that line.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen.
That's all I'm saying. So certain I'm seeing reality, right?
Hey, listen, I'm white. And
you're European.
No. I was born in Canada.
Okay, even so you're a munchie cake then.
I'm a munchie cake. Even though I got a Portuguese passport and a Canadian one. But anyways.
That's paperwork.
You're right.
That's accreditation.
It's not the same. Be Portuguese, but you can't speak the language.
Yeah.
But I still have the same passport.
The Canadian or Portuguese?
You know,
Portuguese.
If any of my sons wanted to get into construction, I would highly recommend it. It's just, it's a great industry.
You didn't
get
give
into.
Your kids have a hammer at the age interest? Of 5 or 6?
I have.
See,
here's the question. Their grandfather is a finished carpenter. So
I want to know your son's friends. How many of them are getting into construction?
And listen.
Yeah, you're right on that.
One thing's for sure, construction unemployment is going up.
Unemployment. Oh, but, yeah, 100%. But
getting back into this.
No, what's Carlos
got? You got a company like the company I work for, Bothwell. Our president and our senior vice president are going overseas to Vietnam. There's trade schools there, roofing, glazing, cladding. They teach the people English, and we're planning on bringing people into...
I got nothing wrong with that.
Into construction. They'll be in Vancouver to start off, and We're planning on bringing people here.
I'd be really interested to visit a training facility for construction workers in Vietnam.
Yeah, but apparently it's very high level. It's very good from what I'm being told. What other thing that Bothwell's doing, because obviously English is second language, and we're actually teaching English classes in our office, free English classes, right? We have about 6 to 12 people. It varies from night to night.
It's a good way to help integrate the workers.
Really, the cost is minimal.
Yeah,
but it's investing into our people.
Yes,
right. Well, so there's a connection. Safety. You know, we truly care about our people. Well,
communication is key. Yeah. And if you're trying to communicate with workers that don't understand, which is what's been happening for the last 1,000 years again. Yeah. I'm just gonna say 1,000 years for this one. Yeah. But
I tell you, a lot of people appreciate it. We're doing it in Toronto and we're doing it in Vancouver because they have a high Asian workforce in Vancouver, Filipino.
Well, they have Vietnamese. A high Asian population, period, right?
Right. So, but we've recognized when you're sitting somebody in through orientation and they're just, nodding their head and but they truly understand.
We've done
but they want to understand. They want to adapt.
We've done enough training to see guys fall asleep or people fall asleep in our training class. Well,
it's going to be interesting. Like I saw a stat recently where by 2050, the population of Canada is going to get to 80 million. And I really want to know what the majority of that population is going to be. And I think
we're not reproducing at that rate.
That's what I mean. So it's just, you're going to get a different view of what Canada is going to be. And unfortunately, not a lot of the people that are coming into Canada are going into construction. Mm-hmm. So I like hearing about Vietnam.
One thing,
I'm sure there's other countries. Ireland was a lot like that when Harper was in power. You know,
there's also, from a political standpoint, again, there's been the automotive industry. How much money do they get yearly?
Probably
a lot. How much does construction get?
Nothing.
So again, one of the things that our senior management, our president, he is meeting with high-level provincial politicians, pushing the point, what are you guys doing to solve the problem? We need help. And
they're making bathrooms work.
He is making headway, I'll just say that, with certain politicians. I don't know,
it's an election year.
We're sounding the bell. Like, come on, we need help.
Yeah, no.
You know, you rely on us to build your buildings, to build your facilities, but we have a crisis here on our hand.
Crisis is a good word to describe it.
I know we're getting away from safety a little bit, but it all goes hand in hand.
It does. And previous shows we've talked about.
If you bring in a workforce that's not understanding safety, then that's worse.
Yeah.
It's definitely creating more challenges for employers out there. You know, it solves some problems, but it also creates some other problems. And employers that have a wide or a bunch of different languages being spoken, you got to start thinking outside the box here and see how you're going to communicate, what you're going to do, how are you going to bring them into the fold, you know, verify training, verify this, go over that, because you want them to be at the same level or expectations or standards that you set within your organization.
They also want that too, the worker. You think a worker wants to come to Canada and never learn how to speak English or never learn how to communicate with others that they're working side by side with? Of course they do. Yeah. They want to, but they're not being given the opportunity. So if companies like yours that you work for, they're doing that and they're offering that, bonus points. No, you should be getting accreditation for that. You should be getting some money from the government from that, right?
Yeah, we do it because we care about our employees.
It's important.
If we get a recognition because we're teaching English,
so be it.
That's paramount. I think that's huge. I think that's a valuable.
Really, the cost is minimal
because a lot of companies are not even paying attention to that. They're replacing the workers.
And you know what? There's a huge market for that. We're finding
for what.
For teaching English in the construction.
That's what I'm saying.
I know of an instructor, a teacher, and on the side, she's doing
English classes
online.
Oh, online. They want to navigate Canada.
Yeah. There's ways to do it. There's a market for it.
Let's just also keep in mind that the people that come into a different country in Canada, in this case, some are here for good reasons.
Yeah.
And some are here for bad reasons. Some are here to milk the system.
Yep.
Some are here to or take advantage of the system because our system has a lot of loopholes. And some are here to work hard. And like a majority of our parents,
yep,
I'll say everyone's at this table's parents. Well, I don't know about you, Otto, but everyone here, you know, came here, worked their asses off, had two jobs. You know, you're putting in the time, you're putting the hours, you're building, you're setting up roots, you're doing a lot of these things that I respect.
Yeah.
But you just described construction. All there's bad apples. There's good apples. There's people here that want to take advantage of the system. There's 100%. People that don't want to take. So it's construction in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, like I guess
any human nature to take advantage of any situation.
Yeah. Maybe for some. I don't know. But listen.
No, you're given that choice to whether or not you're going to.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Back into it. Implementation. Back 800 into it. Workers.
We
got to
look at wrapping it up.
Don't be in a rush.
70 man. Minutes.
Are we at 70 minutes already?
Yes. Wow. That's why.
All right. Training, implementation, improvement in metrics, advice to other employers. So you guys implement, you go through the motions. What does implementation of your health and safety policy and program with a new worker look like?
So the implementation is obviously developing the procedure, the policy, right? Then you train it, right? So you got to train it and communicate it at the mm-hmm. same time. But also the biggest thing that I think people or employers fail to do is evaluate it. You got to evaluate. Is it working? Or and is it does it work? Do we need to adjust it? And
well, if you put a lot of time and effort into something like this, you want to make sure that.
But people miss that evaluation part. They
what
just
metrics do you through. Use for evaluation?
What metrics?
Yeah, like how do you evaluate? Nobody died this month?
No.
On a joking note. But okay,
but toolbox near talks. Misses. Well, how many? Simple. We're having issues with toolbox talks. So I would say that's training, right? So how many of those are being done? Are they being done consistently? Mm-hmm. Are we hitting off the topics that we need, right? So you got to allow at least 3 months to evaluate it. And at the end of 3 months, okay, I have a sufficient sample size of the...
This is working.
That's this is working. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. You guys are tracking what orders being issued, near misses.
Yeah.
First aid kit usage.
Yes.
LTIs.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
Okay, so you're tracking all these different metrics.
So statistics, right? So we're we're communicating the statistics, the different near misses, property damage, total modified work cases that we have. Right. So what are we doing to improve that?
Early and safe return to work, which is also a huge one for WSIB and SOC. Yeah.
Yes. What I'm hearing is that you're describing all those little details that you're evaluating based on the implementation of your program. Every single one of those items are connected to profit somehow.
Yep.
Whether it's a loss or a gain.
Yeah.
Is that not right?
Yeah. But safety and money are hand in hand in a lot of ways.
But again, like everything, and it's not that we prioritize one over the other.
No, no, no.
It's a cost. There's a cost to doing this podcast. Yeah. There's a cost to doing, running a department. There's a cost. So we're just trying to be safe, productive, and put some good quality work out there.
Which
there's
is nothing the most wrong important with that. Part.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right, so... The process is long, but worth it.
Yes.
Long, how long? Years? Yeah,
well, you guys...
You took a year. A little bit more than a year or less than a year?
Less to implement CORE? It was probably like less than a year to implement CORE.
Well, build the health and safety program. Well, the program. Communicate the program. Train all the workers.
We already had CORE. We just had to transition to the CORE 2020. So I did it like less than a year.
Fair. So we're talking about now the first version of CORE, version 1.0, and then it became version, let's say, 2.0.
Yes. CORE 2020 is what they call it.
I get the sense that Phil's not a fan of CORE.
It's not that I'm not... Wait, before you guys start speaking for me. It's not that I'm not a fan of CORE or I'm a fan of this or I'm a fan of that. I come from an enforcement background. Yep. My version of safety and... how things should be done. And not everybody agrees with me, which is totally fine, right? I'm neutral. I don't care what format your health and safety program is in. And don't get me wrong, I've done CORE and ISO for my clients. Not all of them, but the ones that are willing to go through the motions. And it's benefited them, and it's measurable, and they're happy, and the workers are safer, mm-hmm. and I support it, right? Because we're implementing it. my concern is, you know, people think that, oh, because I'm this or I'm that, I'm safer. No, listen, you've raised the bar in terms of your paperwork, right? But does that translate on the site? And for me, that disconnect is where safety really starts, right?
I agree.
That's where it starts. And when we talked earlier about these programs, could it be completely falsified? Yeah. I'll say yes. I'll say yes because I am capable of doing it. I am capable of building an entire health and safety program for an imaginary company and going through all the motions and getting just because I know the loopholes and I know how to manage and navigate.
But I think
can it be done? Yes.
Yeah, but I think it's...
I would never do it though.
Can it be a safer job site? Yes and no. When safety is on site, where they're coaching, where they're answering questions, kind of clarifying certain things, yes. When safety, health and safety is not on the job site, I don't know what the percentage is. Away,
the mice come out and play.
Yeah, but I have come across foremen who actually want to do the right thing by their people.
Oh, yeah.
There are that. Let's just not forget about them. Right?
No,
it's not
at
always
all.
Negative, right?
Not at all.
I've seen both sides. So the only thing we keep doing as a health and safety professionals, keep pushing the message through.
Sure.
It's like daily maintenance. Yeah, you've implemented the program. Yeah, that's great. You got all the bells and whistles. You know, you got all the recognition, but you cannot just take your foot off the gas.
Yeah.
You have to go out on these minus 20 days.
What? That's too cold.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, I was out on a site minus, it might have been minus 15. You know, I found some things.
Sure.
Right?
No one expects you to show up that day.
Right?
Are you wearing your long johns today, Carlo?
Right?
Are you wearing your long johns today?
No, I'm not actually.
No?
No, but I will.
I got my long johns on.
Right? So, but again, you have to be out there. You have to be present. You have to communicate. Are we on every job all the time? No, but...
You got eyes and ears.
We have eyes and ears. We have people reporting.
Yep.
Anonymously.
But I mean, just as a business, if you get the accreditation, you jump through the hoops,
yeah.
You design everything, you implement, you assess it. Once you get over those hurdles and now you start tendering and you're getting projects as a result of it, that's not a signal for you to stop.
No, it's not. Comes from the top.
Yeah.
What does the president of our company want? And it's pretty clear to me. He wants to be the best. Yep. And I want to work for a company that wants to be the best.
For sure.
I'm very competitive, and I've told him this.
Yep.
I want me to be better than our competitors.
Yep. Do you guys have a sign at your office that has, like, how many days since the last injury?
No, we don't.
We don't do that
because, I mean, I could, but nah, we don't that, do
that's
that.
A, that's,
we
that's,
communicate it other ways. We have meetings with our supervisors, our managers, our VPs. We go through all our lost time.
Just missed those. I want to see those right next to the calendars from the 70s and 80s.
Start comparing stats from 40 years back. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right. But one thing's for sure.
Yeah.
For your story, your organization, yep. Your employer, for you guys, the path you went through worked for you guys.
Yes.
It's helped your company.
Yes.
I don't want to be speaking for you. Correct me.
No,
if
but,
I'm wrong,
but I'll stop you.
There you go.
I'll stop you.
Thanks. And it's worked for you guys. Yes. And the path you take with the accredited program, which is CORE, yep. Pushed out by IHSA.
Yes.
Or run by IHSA is probably a better word. IHSA.
Free I still plug. Get the sense.
Free plug. But it's worked for you guys, and that's the path you guys went.
Yes.
And you guys are good with it.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows 10 years from now how it's going to be, but this is the course that we've chosen, and...
And it's working for your company, it's working the workers, and it's working for everybody associated.
Which is the most important part out of all.
And you know what? I find there's a sense of pride that we have some type of accreditation from some workers.
But also what's more important is the safety record that you guys have associated.
Yes.
Because you've been implementing all these things.
Yes. You know, people want to work for a company that works safe.
Yeah.
So if they're going to, you know, Joe Blow roofing or cladding, you know, and they have no standards and, you know, it's a little sketchy, right?
Just in the roofing sector alone, you have a very wide range of employer types.
Yes. Oh,
I can imagine.
Yes.
I was talking about this with a training I was doing for supervisor training where a roofing company was picking up homeless guys on Dundas Street and putting them on the roof. and using the homeless guys to scrape off all the shingles and then painting them with cases of beer. So there is a wide range.
Absolutely. I never heard that story, but it is a good story.
If I name you the company, you'll be like, what?
Oh, God.
But anyways.
We could talk after.
This podcast probably should have been 3 hours with you today, Carlo. But that being said, that's the accredited programs in a nutshell.
Yes.
Right? And there's a couple different paths you can go on, a couple different styles or formats. But again, they have more similarities than differences, which is great. So it's just really finding the right fit for your organization. I think that's what it comes down to.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, what would be the smallest company, the amount of employees, or I guess revenue generated, that they should consider these accreditations? Like less than 10 employees, or?
I don't know. It depends on whether or not you're going to be bidding on municipal and provincial contracts.
So it's more about that.
Yeah.
That's what I think it comes down to.
I've heard of an engineering firm. And I guess
with four guys that deploy.
Yeah, he ran his business out of his basement going for core.
Did he get it?
I don't know. I'm assuming eventually he got it. We'll just say that.
Yeah. The primary reason so then they could bid
work,
And then they subcontract that work out,
of course,
to possibly non-accredited programs.
The guys with the beer.
I don't know, man. There's some technicalities there and stuff like that.
You do got to work things out, because I do know of a company that bid on a project in Alberta, and Alberta is the
petri dish for these.
Well, Core started off in Alberta.
Okay.
And there was a certain glazing company. I don't think they're in existence anymore. A certain installer. So you have to be Core certified to bid on work anywhere in Alberta. So this company got the program or got the job. They weren't Core certified, but they subbed out the work to a company in Alberta that was Core certified.
Some loopholes and shenanigans.
Yeah. So you're right. They do have to tie, you know.
Yeah, there needs to be tightening up too. And even as safety professionals, man, you know, you drive around the city and you go to different sites and you see this company is an accredited program, and you can tell by the stickers on their truck. And, you know, I have the privilege.
Not hard to get stickers, by the way.
Sorry?
It's not hard to get stickers.
No, but you know, I have the privilege of knowing some of these companies for the last 20 years and some of these companies very intimately. And you look at these stickers and you're like, how the hell did this company become an accredited program or an accredited employer?
Like some,
maybe they changed their ways. And
some masonry restoration company.
How many of those stickers are valid?
Listen, it's just some people got into the line before they maybe started tightening up the line. But
what are you trying to say? I'm having a hard time reading the subtitles.
I'm trying hard to explain it. All I know is that sometimes you look at things and you're like, how the hell did that happen? And there maybe is an explanation for it, but I still look at it and say, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
But anyways, anything else you would like to add about Core? And
no, I think we covered it all.
I think so too, man.
I think we can cover more, but I think for the most part, the basics.
Do you guys want to go into this injury that I got here?
What injury is it?
Not really. This one's an industrial one. Workplace injury results in $180,000 fine for Windsor Company.
You know my response, right?
Not enough.
Yeah, it should be $1.8 million.
Well, maybe we should just wrap it up there. Let's
insane, right?
Let's just
not. I guess I put more value on life, human life. Well, it depends on the value.
Listen, we're a little pressed for time, so we're not going to go into full detail with this one. But to sum this one up really quick. Worker goes to fix something that's jammed in a machine, a press of some type, in an industrial facility. The worker is inside the machine. Ugh. Next worker comes, turns the machine on, pushes the power button.
Yeah.
Critical injury.
This was in Windsor?
This one was in Windsor. And $180,000 fine. This one really plays into lockout and fatality. Yeah. No. This one was a...
He survived?
They survived, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe they only caught this part and not this part, right? Sometimes a few inches count, Manny.
Yeah.
But this comes down to lockout and tagout and making sure that moving parts of machinery or energy or electricity or all those things that come through physics.
Yeah. You unplug.
So, I mean, I would say, obviously the workers didn't recognize the hazard. It could have been some practices there that could have been.
What's crazy is they had a light curtain.
Oh,
Right? So for them so to have a light curtain, not no Mickey Mouse company.
Do they walk around the light curtain? Because there's sometimes the way they're set up. If not set up correctly, you can kind of walk around.
We should read it, man. But apparently the guy went through the light curtain.
Yeah.
And then it disengaged. And then the next guy came and said, hey, this thing's disengaged. Let me engage it. And boom. Oh.
He didn't see the person?
I guess not. Probably a big piece of machinery is on the other side. Who knows?
Yeah. Wow. So that goes back to training or lack thereof.
Sure. Part of it. And making sure that the rules are being followed.
That's it.
Right? So, all right. Well, Carl, listen, thank you very much for coming in, man. Very nice insightful. To meet
you. Appreciate nice to meet you. Sharing everything.
Had a lot of fun. It was good.
You're more than welcome. A-Team tonight?
Hey, man, one of my favorite shows when I was a kid, besides Knight Rider.
Yeah. Good shows back then.
Right?
Yeah.
Way you can't watch them now because it's so far-fetched on everything.
I don't know, man.
If you have IPTV, you can still watch
it. You can't find do A-Team? Any of the modifications that BA did in any one of those shows. It would take a week to do those modifications, man.
You're loving the A-Team. What was his BA standard short for on A-Team?
BA Baracus. It was
Baracus. That's it.
So we say Bothwell Accurate, the A-Team, right?
It's us. Well, listen, it sounds like you guys have a great organization, a good team over there, and good luck on all the projects you're working on, and stay safe, man.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10 plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.